an American icon that at first blush doesn't seem very American at all. If you tried to come up with a fictional character least likely to endure as a major figure in our pop culture, a pretty good one would be a middle-aged Jewish milkman in a Russian village in 1905 singing in Yiddish.
If I were a rich man, I have a dividum. All day long I bidibidibum. If I were a wealthy man.
But then the musical Fiddler on the Roof opened on Broadway.
Oh, Lord, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, it's no shame to be poor. But it's no great honor either.
Tevye is poor, his daughters are rebelling against tradition, and there's a pogrom around the corner, which in the mid-1960s turned out, who knew, to be the perfect recipe for gigantic theatrical success. Fiddler is now back on Broadway in a new production, The Sixth. When the show celebrated its 50th anniversary a couple of years ago, I asked WNYC's Jim O'Grady to figure out why and how it happened.
Producer Hal Prince sits in his office in Rockefeller Center and recalls a difficult meeting held there in 1961, which to him seems like yesterday. On one side of the table are three of Broadway's rising stars, lyricist Sheldon Harnick, composer Jerry Bock, and librettist Joe Stein. They've already got Tony Awards and Pulitzer Prizes under their belts. But across from them is a guy you do not want to mess with, director Jerome Robbins. Prince calls him Jerry, and Jerry Robbins is a titan of the New York stage, fresh from winning a Tony and Academy Award for West Side Story. He is used to giving orders, and now he's grilling the three men about their script for Fiddler.
Jerry kept saying, but what's this show about? And the usual answer was, well, it's about this milkman who has five daughters and how can he marry them off? And then somebody would say, it's about a pogrom.
He would say, no, that's the plot.
That's lyricist Sheldon Harnick.
That's not what gives these stories their power, and that's what we have to find out.
The two sides went back and forth.
Jerry said, but what the hell is this show really about?
Until Harnick had enough.
Finally, Sheldon blew his stack and said, Jerry, what are you talking about? What's it about? I mean, it's about tradition. What else is it about? And Jerry said, that's what I've been hoping somebody would tell me. Now write a song called Tradition.
Here in Anatevka, we have our traditions for everything. How to eat, how to sleep, how to work, even how to wear clothes. For instance, we always keep our heads covered, and we wear these little prayer shawls. This shows our constant devotion to God. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you, I don't know. But it's a tradition.
Harnick says that's Fiddler's dramatic core, the fight between old ways and new.
You know, the Enlightenment that started in Western Europe percolated east and hit these little shtetls, and people's lives began to change. They began to break away from these traditions. And that's what's happening in this show.
He was making the show about something that made sense to Japanese, Middle Easterners, any group of people who have tradition. And every group of people has tradition.
By the time Fiddler reached Broadway, Tevye and his traditions had been around for 70 years. He was born in the late 19th century in the imagination of a sickly but charismatic man from Kiev who wrote in Yiddish. His name is Sholem Aleichem.
Sholem Aleichem is a pen name. It means howdy, you know, how you doing?
Alyssa Solomon is a professor at the Columbia School of Journalism.
He was one of the most beloved writers in a very short time, speaking to poor people, poor Jews, in their common language.
Solomon researched Sholem Aleichem's life for her book, Wonder of Wonders, A Cultural History of Fiddler on the Roof.
He would give readings around the Pale of Settlement, and thousands would flock to hear him, and he apparently was a great speaker.
At the time, the Pale of Settlement covers 500,000 square miles between the Black Sea and the Baltic Sea. Sholem Aleichem writes the first of eight stories about Tevye the Milkman in 1894. He raises the stakes by placing the fictional Jewish market town of Anatevka in the Pale, in the middle of anti-Semitic imperial Russia. It just gives you the feeling that stuff's going to get nasty. The Tevye stories turn out to be popular with Sholem Aleichem's fans, but what he really wants is to have a hit play in America.
He's in his 40s, it's 1905, and he comes here because he needs to make money. He has this great idea that he's going to strike it rich in the Yiddish theater in New York.
He gets off to a flying start. The two biggest producers in Yiddish theater compete to be the first to open a play by Sholem Aleichem. He ends up opening two shows on the same night.
Both of them flop. They don't really get Americans. This new class of people, even though they might be recent immigrants, they're making a new life here in America. And Sholem Aleichem's work is really just about the old country in a way that isn't helping them grapple with what's going on with them in their new homes. Or maybe they just weren't very good plays. I mean, there's also that.
Sholem Aleichem borrows money and sails back to Europe. He writes a new play based on the Tevye stories. He calls it Tevye the Milkman. The play debuts in New York in 1919, but Sholem Aleichem has died 3 years earlier of influenza. This time, his play is a hit. So what changed between his early failures on the Yiddish stage and his posthumous success?
What happened? Well, World War I happened. It's hard for us to think about this now post-Holocaust, when we know that Eastern European Jewish culture was pretty much wiped off the map. But from the perspective of 1919, Jewish culture had just been wiped off the map.
Allowing Jewish Americans to view the shtetl not as a backwater they'd escaped, but as a place suffused with nostalgia. Also, Joe Stein changed the ending of Aleichem's play. The Tsar's police still evict Tevye and his family from Anatevka, but crucially, Stein has them set off for the United States.
And two generations later, the grandchildren of the Tevyes are sitting in the Broadway audience, knowing how well, in fact, they have done.
Tradition!
When Fiddler opened in 1964, Americans were beginning to embrace their ethnic roots. The country's myth of origin was shifting from Plymouth Rock to Ellis Island. And making Tevye a would-be immigrant helped non-Jews relate to him and his struggles.
The Tevye character is trying to hold on and trying to change and shift and bend and acclimate as necessary in order to keep things going, to keep peace in his home, and to understand himself. He makes error after error in these stories in terms of his daughters, and he never quite comes to, for readers, he never quite comes to satisfactory self-realization. That's part of the tension in the stories that's so beautiful.
Joe Stein first came across Sholem Aleichem's Tevye stories in 1960. He showed them to Jerry Bach and Sheldon Harnick, and they all saw right away that Fiddler the Musical would hinge on the singing milkman. He has to be exasperating, yet sympathetic, Shakespearean in one scene and vaudevillian in the next. And they agree, Tevye must be played by the comic actor Zero Mostel. But
everybody wondered when Zero was approached whether he would choose to do the show because he and Jerome Robbins had huge political differences.
Both Zero Mostel and Jerome Robbins had been called before the House Un-American Activities Committee. That was back in the era of the communist witch hunts, and the committee wanted them to name names. Robbins did, Mostel did not.
There was bad blood between them. The first day of rehearsal, Zero was there. Everybody was waiting for Robbins to come in to see how Zero would react. And finally, Robbins came in, and everybody got quiet, and Zero looked at him and said, "Hi there, blabbermouth." Well, Robbins just threw back his head and roared with laughter, which gave everybody else permission to laugh, and that broke the ice.
I knew the show had kind of an irresistible quality about it, and I knew it was going to be a hit.
Oh, well, let's talk about that. So this show...
Oh, by the way, I'm going to interrupt you. Please, the reviews were lousy.
That's right. Hal Prince says that during out-of-town tryouts, critics panned the show.
And then when we got to Broadway, the reviews were good. Not great. Good. Caviling a little bit.
Here's to our prosperity, our good health and happiness, and most important, to life, to life, l'chaim.
But strong word of mouth drew lines around the block. Fiddler was off and running.
Here's to the father I try to be.
Here's to my bride-to-be.
Drink l'chaim, to life, l'chaim.
So on the anniversary, when it became the longest running show on Broadway, I reprinted all the reviews on gold paper and put them in a little booklet and gave them to the audience.
Did that satisfy your lust for vengeance on the critics?
It's not a lust for vengeance. It's an irony. I'm smiling, aren't I?
Oh, Hal Prince is smiling as he hops on the intercom with his assistant.
Nancy, what is the payoff on Fiddler to the investor?
A couple of minutes later, Nancy comes in with a letter.
Here we go. I'll read this letter to you.
Prince has produced and directed dozens of Broadway plays over his 60-year career, and he's pretty sure that Fiddler has yielded his biggest payday.
This brings the total profit return to 3,884%.
And if our good fortune never comes, here's to whatever comes. Drink l'chaim! To life! To life!
Fiddler on the Roof is playing this year on almost 200 stages in Bangalore, India, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and at Asa Clark Middle School in Pewaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, Papa, I don't want to marry him. I can't marry him. I'll be unhappy with him. All my life will be unhappy.
But we made an agreement. With us, an agreement is none.
One, two, one, two.
Life, life, l'chaim.
Everybody repeat after me. L'chaim.
L'chaim.
See, there's a little girl thing, right? Yeah.
L'chaim.
L'chaim to life. Here's to the father I try to be.
Here's to my bride-to-be.
Drink l'chaim to life.
I ask Elisa Solomon how many times she thinks the songs in the show have been covered by other artists.
Well, if I had to be precise, I'd say gazillions.
Gazillions. That is a lot. Cannonball Adderley.
There was a Latin version by Joe Quijano. Miriam Makeba.
Is this the little girl I carried? Is this the little boy at play?
Sheldon Harnick remembers one particular call he got in 2003.
There's a rock artist named Dr. Dre, or Dr. Dre, I don't know how he pronounces his name.
That would be Dr. Dre. He's a producer, more of a rapper, but go on.
And he said he wanted to do a girl's version of If I Were a Rich Man, If I Were a Rich Girl.
That's the Gwen Stefani song that Dr. Dre produced. The point is, Fiddler is still rattling around and relevant at age 50, and that's good for Fiddler consultant Gary John LaRosa. He acted in the show in the 1990s, and now theaters around the country fly him in to help them stage it.
Over the last 30 years, I have probably directed or choreographed over 24 productions of the show, recreating the Robbins choreography.
LaRosa was a 9-year-old Italian-American Catholic kid when he first set eyes on Fiddler on the Roof. Today, he knows every moment, every gesture in the show, in detail.
All of the choreography is either evocative of something or telling the story of what's happening, for example.
He does have a favorite moment. It comes toward the end, when Tevye gets the news that his daughter Hava has defied him and run off with a man outside the faith.
And he sits on the edge of his cart and remembers her as a child, which is his way of trying to hold on to something because he knows that he has already told Golda that she is dead to us. And so...
Is this making you emotional to talk about this?
Yes.
Really, why?
This is the power of the show.
The power of the show is in how it takes a Yiddish story about Jewish life in a particular time and place and makes it universal. Anna Tevka becomes a stand-in for whichever old country you identify with. And Tevya, with his prayer shawl and pleading with his children, becomes every immigrant father. I spoke to a guy named Hossein Amri, a Muslim in his 50s who left Iran as a young man, came to America, and raised a family. He's watched Fiddler on the Roof 6 times and cried 6 times.
My favorite part is the Anna Tevka song, the very last end of the movie, because it reminds me when I left. I'm glad that I came out and I was able to succeed abroad, but you know, you have to leave your family behind. Every aspect of the movie that I saw, that could be totally universal and apply to everybody, everyone in every corner of the world.
May the Lord protect and defend you. May he always shield you from shame. May you come to be in Israel a shining name.
Thanks to Jim O'Grady for that story. You can hear more of Jim on the new WNYC Studios podcast, There Goes the Neighborhood.
Strengthen them